The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
I help people every day to improve their health. Sometimes they've had lifelong issues or not fully recovered after a stressful event. The doctors have often run out of ideas. My name is Kevin Davis. Our bioresonance system starts with an automated full body scan. It's simply the quickest way to shine a light on what's going on inside, with treatments during the same session. For the latest health tech at the best price, visit biohealthtech.co.uk today and make us your first choice for a healthier you.
Hello and welcome to another Yes to Life show. I'm Robin Daly, founder of Yes to Life, a UK charity that helps people with cancer access the many benefits of integrative medicine. In the show, I talk to many people involved in integrative medicine on the practitioner front, on the patient side, and on the research side. My guest this week describes herself as an integrative medicine consultant. Victoria Fenton works in London and specialises in supporting people with cancer. I'm talking to Victoria over Skype. Hi Victoria, great to have you on the Yes to Life show today.
Oh hi, it's very, very nice to be here.
So you describe yourself as an integrative medicine consultant. And from reading those three excellent recent blog posts of yours, I judge that you clearly feel you've got a lot to offer people with cancer. So let's dream for a moment that there are 100 UK oncologists listening to this show right now. What would you like to say to them about integrative medicine and the effect it could have on the well-being of their patients?
Oh, wow. What a question. Basically, there is so much more to health than just the medical interventions. And there is so much somebody practicing integrative medicine can actually offer to anybody suffering from pretty much any form of cancer, actually. And there are many ways in which somebody like myself and other practitioners who are familiar with the area will work alongside conventional oncologists and conventional practitioners and allopathic medicine to improve the outcomes of all types of cancer treatment. There's many ways to support either the patient themselves or the treatments that are being offered conventionally. And there's always more that you can do. And I think when you get a cancer diagnosis, the tendency is to want to throw everything at it. Mm. And I definitely feel that integrative medicine practitioners have something to offer, and there's lots more that can be thrown at it, if you see what I mean.
Mm. Great. All right. So before we go on to talk more about integrative medicine itself and cancer, I'd like to ask you about your journey to becoming an integrative medicine consultant. What started you in this direction and what have you done to earn your title?
Okay. So I actually got very ill when I was 17. And I was very, very sick and lost a lot of weight very quickly because I basically couldn't keep food down. And there were a lot of conversations, a lot of investigations, a lot of mysterious diagnoses given, and a lot of, basically a lack of clarity for a long, long time. I was eventually, some 8 years later, after multiple hospitalizations, diagnosed with a genetic connective tissue disorder called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. And at that point, I expected the floodgates of treatments and options and therapy to descend upon me and I'd be fine. And it just wasn't there. And I suddenly realized that the conventional model and the NHS is fantastic and wonderful for life-saving medications and all that kind of realm. But when it comes to other elements of healthcare, so nutrition, lifestyle, sleep, socialization, air, light exposure, all of that kind of stuff, it's just not covered under a conventional model. And I had to go on my own investigative journey to work out what else was out there? What could I find that would support my journey to health? And in so doing, the only way to do it at that point was to qualify in nutrition and then naturopathy. And eventually I found functional medicine, which is essentially what integrative medicine is, but a lot of people don't understand when you say functional medicine. But it's essentially systems biology. So it's understanding the body as a set of interconnected systems that all speak to one another, have their own roles, but also are very dependent on one another for their function. And as soon as you take that understanding of the body, suddenly the functioning of this system that is the human vehicle opens up. And then you keep investigating, because I became fascinated by the human body and qualified with the Cressler Institute in the US. And so now I am an integrative medicine or functional medicine practitioner.
Mm. Right. So, yes, functional medicine is having quite an impact, isn't it? After it's been around, I don't know, 25 years or something, but it seems to be really coming into its own in the States, obviously far more than here. But nonetheless, here, I think there's a Rongan effect coming from Rongan Chatterjee on the TV, having trained as a functional medicine practitioner. And I think a lot of GPs are picking up on it now. They actually love the new set of tools that it offers them for helping people.
Mm-hmm. Mm. It's the fact that when you're trained in the UK or even in the US in any medical degree, if you like, the training on nutrition or lifestyle medicine is next to nothing. It's very small indeed. And so functional or integrative medicine is essentially lifestyle medicine. And there is the British Society for Lifestyle Medicine now, which is essentially a set of GPs who are all using these tools. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's the Rongan effect. It is the Doctor in the House series, and we're a very small world, so we do all know each other, and it's a very nice world to be part of because we're all pulling in the right direction, the same direction.
Right.
And the only distinction I make with the use of the word integrative is because sometimes the functional medicine world gets a bad rap for being against conventional medicine, and it really isn't. It's
really
designed to dovetail everything that conventional medicine doesn't do.
Right, right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that's one of the great things about it, really. It definitely stops a massive gap, doesn't it? That's completely missing. So, great. And the Society for Lifestyle Medicine, just so as people know, what are the requirements to be a member of that and what does it do?
As far as I'm aware, because I'm not a member, as far as I'm aware, you actually have to be a GP. So you have to be a doctor, a qualified doctor with a medical license here in the UK. A colleague of mine is on the board, and there's a group of very influential doctors in the UK trying to bring GP training in functional medicine to the UK. And again, Rongan is on the board and has been very influential in trying to educate GPs in this sort of hinterland of nutrition, lifestyle, other stuff that can be done on a daily basis that makes much more difference to people's health than the treatments or the 15-minute consultations they'll get with their GP.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you're very clear about being an integrative medicine practitioner as opposed to any sort of alternative practitioner. Can you explain exactly what you mean by this and why you've chosen to work this way?
Yes, I mean, the clue is in the name. I work with conventional medicine. I work with Eastern, Western medicine, the integrative. I bring it all together because it's my philosophy that every element of healthcare has benefits for patients. And my job as an integrative medicine practitioner is more often than not to be the linchpin of somebody's care plan with oversight of all these different elements. So I can understand if this nutritional element is in place and this lifestyle element is in place and this medication is in place and these supplements being taken and this osteopathic treatment is occurring. It's all these things that come into play when you're dealing with whole systems healthcare. And so integration of medication, supplements, nutrition, all of these factors is how I like to work and how it works best. And I also incorporate the psychology in that, so mindset medicine, trauma work, all of the deeper mental attitude, self-perception type therapies, which can influence treatment outcomes.
Mm. So you would say that everything you bring along just adds to conventional care?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the benefit of, particularly when you're talking and focusing on cancer, the benefit of using other modalities and incorporating other tools is that they can often improve the effect of cancer drugs, cancer treatments. They can make your immune system, put it in the best place possible to deal with whatever you're dealing with, but also give you more reserves to deal with what can be quite traumatic treatment processes for cancer. So effectively, my job is to not only support the body as a whole, but also to improve the efficacy of some of the allopathic or conventional medicines.
Mm. Okay, great. Now, you particularly focusing, I think, on helping people who are going through cancer and cancer treatment. And in order to do that, how much do you need to know, or have you had to find out about the conventional treatments themselves and the effects that they have?
In effect, a lot of what we do in integrative medicine will always be complementary, because we're not stepping into pathways. But my major focus when I work integratively is to understand the mechanism of action of medications, because systems biology is all based on mechanism. So if you understand the pathways of supplement reactions or supplement effects, and also cancer treatments or any drugs, actually, you can fully comprehend how these therapies map together. Mm-hmm. And there are certain areas where there's a little bit of grey area of immunomodulatory effect, and that is a little bit where you have to do your research. So someone like me, the normal standard training that you get within functional medicine settings is not sufficient to cover all of this extra stuff. So the onus is on the practitioner to understand the mechanism of action. But because the cancer field is moving as rapidly as any other medical field, I always sort of do my research again every time, particularly when there's another drug. I mean, some of them are much more familiar to me and I work with things much more frequently than others, but right. I am always trying to keep up with as much of the media, as much of the research as possible, so that I know I'm understanding the mechanisms and what these drugs are trying to do in each different patient.
And to get that understanding, you've done it yourself. Is there anywhere where you can gain that understanding in a way of training?
Not particularly. There are a few books that are now coming out which are much more overviews of certain integrative cancer therapies and ways to understand the treatments that we would use in an integrative world. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's just a dive into PubMed that you need to do to understand what drugs are being used. And also, I'm trained in body biochemistry, which means that I can read a blood test as well as your conventional doctor. Mm-hmm. I can also understand the influence of these molecules and how they interact in biochemistry. So in that way, it's almost using first principles to understand the way biochemistry works, and to have the facility to be able to read either the research or just the leaflet on your drug in terms of understanding where the action is trying to help, whether it's trying to boost the immune system, to lower the immune system, what the drug is specifically trying to do. And then you can use your knowledge of all the integrative stuff to work out which tools can be slotted in as puzzle pieces to support that specific medication or treatment.
Mm-hmm. Sounds complex stuff.
The body is complex but not complicated, as somebody said to me the other day. It is. It's understandable, but you have to take simultaneously a 30,000 foot view and a very micro view to fully understand how it's working and how all the bits map together.
Right. Okay, so if you were to single out one aspect of a person's well-being across the whole spectrum of body, mind and spirit as being the single most important one to focus on, the first one to attend to when you see somebody new, what would it be?
Mindset. Always. Because it influences absolutely every other element. Yeah.
Well, I completely agree with you there. That would be my view as well. But, you know, that's not really appreciated very widely, unfortunately, not in normal oncological circles anyway. But it's, as you say, it's kind of underpins everything else that follows.
And there's a very narrow line between saying mindset and people leaping to the conclusions where it's like, but it's not in my mind, it's in my body. Yeah. And actually saying the most powerful tool we have as human beings, forget every drug, every supplement, every food, it's the mind, because it lives with us all the time. And it's the one effect that they have to account for in every single research study that you will ever read in human biology, the placebo effect, which is effectively the effect of the mind on the perception of whatever treatment is being given, and therefore it directly influences the benefit or the outcome. So when you're looking at that body of evidence and you go, well, okay, so what can I use as my greatest, most powerful tool here? The mind has to be most influential on the nervous system, which is effectively the bedrock of how messages are sent around your body, the state that your body's in, whether it's in stress or it's in relaxation, mm-hmm. and also your perception of everything that you then go on to do. Right. And there is a very fine line between sort of false positivity and affirmations that are sort of baseless, or yeah. all this kind of positive mental attitude, fake it till you make it stuff. That's not really what I'm talking about. It's much more about positivity in terms of optimism, very important, right. and also actually understanding the body is such a privilege to actually know, okay, so this is what's happening, this is how it's working, and I feel more empowered and more in control of this situation. That's a major difference, particularly in cancer and oncology, when you're often dealing with a very disempowering diagnosis, a very kind of shock diagnosis, yes. where you're like, oh, my body's turned into something that I don't relate
yeah.
to.
Yeah. Yes. Mm. No, you're absolutely right. I completely agree about that. The sort of trumped up optimism, I mean, maybe it's helpful to some people, but it's not the same thing. There are good reasons to be optimistic or hopeful to some extent for anybody in any situation, as long as they're still alive and they're not actually dying. And so to take that away is criminal. I think it's a really bad thing to do to someone. But it's something that everybody can reasonably have, and is in fact the very basis of life, is the sort of forward-looking optimism. That's what being alive is.
Absolutely. And always believing that there's a purpose to things, I think, also helps. So the mindset of understanding the role that any illness plays in your life, whether it's to change you or to help you learn, and all of that attitude is often difficult to cultivate, right. but it's definitely there, and it's definitely important in terms of feeling that there's a trajectory that you're on that is going somewhere rather than losing hope.
Incredibly important. I often point to the fact that actually if you're feeling hopeless, if you just take the most basic thing about the mindset is, like, well, what are the chances you're going to do something good to stay alive when your outlook is hopeless? Well, you're not in the right place to even make a decision about the best thing for your future. So, very important. Okay, so integrative medicine is personalised medicine, so I'm sure that you respond to every client's needs as you find them, at least to some extent. But behind that, I guess you've got some sort of structure of procedures you'd like to go through. So can you tell me what I might expect if I came to you for the first time and I've been recently diagnosed with something, let's say, a stage 2 cancer?
Mm-hmm. Well, essentially, the way people work with me, whether it's a cancer diagnosis or any diagnosis, is very similar. Essentially, I want to see all the paperwork I can that's relevant from doctors, you know, any tests that you have, all of that, and I review all of that before I see you. Mm-hmm. And then we sit down and we have a big chat for 90 minutes, basically. And that big chat goes from birth, pre-birth, genetic history, so I understand all the legacy that you've kind of been born with. I walk through all of your health history, life history as well, so big significant events, even things like car accidents and all that kind of stuff, that all filters into, inputs into your body biochemistry. And then we discuss current diet, lifestyle, what treatment plan is, what stage you're in that treatment plan, if there is a specific set of weeks or days or whatever, wherever you're going through and wherever you're at in that process. Sometimes people will come to me and say, I really don't want to go any conventional route at all. I want to do all of this sort of, quote, naturally first. And I will, depending on where they're at and their diagnosis and what their consultants are saying, I will either have a conversation with them and or their consultants and say, look, okay, what are we doing here? Mm-hmm. And from that and all of that synthesis of information, I create a big, long report for people, which summarizes where I view my role should be in terms of their overall healthcare package. Mm-hmm. And I lay out what I think is necessary, and I give people lots of options, explaining benefits and potential side effects, very few, but potential influences on all the treatment options I can offer. And I always, particularly within cancer, open my door to understanding what the oncological team are saying about anything, and I'm always available for their consultants to call me if there's a concern or an issue. Rarely happens, but I do work alongside people and come up with a plan together, and it normally feels like a big package of, okay, this is how we're approaching your cancer. And rather than it being people understanding this is the stage I'm at and this is the potential futures, it turns into a slightly different holistic healthcare model.
Right. So it's largely exploratory right from the start. You're trying to find out, really gather as much information as possible about the whole background of the person.
100%, because functional or integrative medicine is very much about root cause resolution. And when you're dealing with any illness that's manifested in somebody's life today,
yes,
there's a whole genesis pathway of that throughout their history. Mm. And so my role is often as a detective to try and understand where those early stages of these things might have come from. And sometimes I can get it and I totally understand and there's a really clear pathway. Sometimes there just isn't and we have to work from today and focus forward. And in essence, the balance of somebody like me is understanding how much of this is case history, how much are we going to look backwards and come up with the storyline of how this happened, and how much is about, okay, this is the reality we're dealing with. Let's just focus forward. How are we going to benefit you from now? Right. And that's an art more than it's a science.
Okay. Yeah, fair enough. Well, clinicians are supposed to be practicing an art, really. All too often, they're just trotting out what is on the computer these days. But I'm sure most of them would like to be practicing an art, as you describe it. So, in cancer, with the people who've got cancer who come to you, what point from diagnosis right through to post-treatment do you find most people are arriving at your door? And when would you ideally like to see them?
Oh, it's a huge spectrum, actually. And I've even had people who have terminal diagnoses and just want all the alternative other methods to improve well-being and give them the best chance possible. Right through to, I've just been diagnosed, I don't want to talk to any medical professional, I want your help right now, what are we going to do, we're going to beat this thing type attitude. I have all of it, the whole spectrum.
Okay.
Ideally, when I would get people is before they even develop cancer in the first place.
Right.
But that's not possible. But essentially what we're doing in my world is healthy body practices. So as soon as possible, as early as possible, because it almost doesn't matter where you are in your health journey. Mm. What I practice is very simple, doing myself a bit of a disservice, but it is very basic how to look after a human vehicle stuff with a load of tools popped in the top for when the body's got into a massively stressed state, which is what you describe cancer as.
Yes.
So to me personally, it doesn't matter hugely where people find me on their journey. I just like when they do, because I know that it doesn't matter where they are or what the prognosis, I can at least do something to support them, whether that's sending them into their next round of chemotherapy with a different dietary regimen in the background so their body's got a few more buffers to cope with all of that. Mm. Or whether it's, you know, all the mindset stuff to help them psychologically deal with all of the things that happen during treatment. It doesn't make much difference whether you find me at the beginning or the end. I like to help wherever people are at.
Yeah. Well, this is one of the great things about integrative medicine. You know, I like to always think with people who call us at Yes to Life, that we can't guarantee to anybody that their life will be any longer as a result of taking up integrative medicine, but it's quite possible that it will be. But I think we can certainly guarantee that it can be better.
Mm.
So would you say, on balance, though, that you see more people with late-stage cancers where, you know, the places where there's maybe less on offer from conventional medicine than you do in the early stages?
It used to be that way. I have to say, it used to be more that way, where you were getting the people who'd run out of options and potentials within conventional therapies. More so now, it is the interested and, the whole world of medicine is changing. I think a lot of the NHS crises that have happened in the last few years has had a massive influence, where people are being more proactive about recognising that the healthcare system that we have in this country is brilliant but struggling, and it doesn't have all the answers. So I'm getting many more people now who are very early stage diagnosis, very like, oh, we just found this out and I believe I can do something about this naturally. And a lot of the time what I'm getting at the moment is a recognition up front that it is their diet, lifestyle and stress levels that have contributed to their illness. Right. And what's happened to them. and a little bit of genetics as well. Mm-hmm. But even now, people are understanding that genetics are just a predisposition. So all of that's come together, and they just want hand-holding to say, look, the nutrition world is a minefield. I have people telling me to do this fancy diet, that fancy diet, eliminate this, cut out that, smoothie everything. What do? I'm getting a lot more of those moments, which is great for me, because it's like I love creating signal out of noise and making sense to people, and that's kind of what I love to do.
Well, that's really positive to hear. I mean, our experience at Yes to Life is the same. We used to get only very late stage patients almost exclusively at the beginning, but as the years have gone on, it's been increasingly more likely that we get somebody maybe almost on day one of being told they've got cancer, but certainly much earlier on. And that's very heartening, as you say. It's a public education matter, isn't it? The public are more aware that cancer is to do with their lifestyle in the main. You know, that's the most important thing. So that's a great thing that's happened and is leading to this, this kind of proactive approach.
I think that it's not very nice to know that our NHS is struggling as much as it is, and that I have a deep respect for the NHS, and I just wish that insurance companies and all the people who have all that funding would fund people like me, because I know that I have a massive service to offer people that can actually complement very well and take a massive burden off our systems that are struggling. So it's a bittersweet truth that people are now looking elsewhere. And I do like the proactive healthcare element of it. And I do think that it would be nice if everybody could come my way, which is essentially private healthcare, which costs much more money, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I think what's happening in other disciplines, it's not happening in cancer as yet, but of course, Yes to Life, we're pushing for it, is that there is a move, and it's sort of government driven and it's budget driven, to actually build a participatory care outside of the NHS, because, you know, people actually need to be given tools to stay out of hospital. That's actually a prime motivator right now. And of course, you've got tools to keep people out of hospital while they're going through cancer treatment like mad. There's an acceptance in standard cancer care that every round of chemo you're going to be in a little while afterwards with the most horrendous infection of some kind or another, have some more IV antibiotics, which are a very bad idea, clog up the wards, and generally have a miserable time for 4 or 5 days, ready for the next round of chemo. I mean, that's not that necessary, is it? People who are actually looked after well don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, that's the patient that I love to get calling me up saying, look, I'm about to go in for my first, or sometimes often my second round of this, and I know it was horrible last time, what can you do to help me this time? And there's loads I can do. I mean, literally loads. And it a lot is a little bit of effort on the part of the patient, but they're so willing to do it, and the experience is different. So it's turned from being, like you say, a stack of problems, not just the cancer and the chemo and everything else that follows, to being actually something that their bodies ride through much more easily.
Yeah, and the costs involved in some of the supportive care that we're talking about, I postulate, are way below the cost of dealing with the results of not doing it in hospital.
I think you're probably exactly right. Unfortunately, with money and finances, it's always the behavioural economic side of it, which is interesting, which is, yes, you're saving money on the back end of like the NHS care, but when it's upfront out of pocket, it can look different to the patient. But the reality is that one of the major things that I would suggest for going into chemo is just changes to diet. And you've got to eat, so it's just where you apportion your funds for food. And it's not that difficult. Just change that. The finances look the same, and it's an entirely different physical experience, which, I mean, nobody's ever going to say it's a nice thing to go through, but it certainly makes it, you bounce out of it rather than be hit for weeks until your next round, basically.
Yeah. Anyway, we're making the case for saying actually that actually commissioning this kind of outside care will save the NHS money if they actually paid for it. Yeah. So that's our case. I often hear people saying things to me like, I'll just get my treatment at the hospital finished and then I'll start looking at diet and things, which is totally frustrating to both you and I, I'm sure. Since, you know, I know just how much integrative medicine can bring to the table during their treatment. You know, that's a key time when it could really help. And I often imagine their plan that they've made is in order to avoid all the potential for conflict with their oncologist. Or maybe it's just because they feel completely overwhelmed coping with the treatment protocol at the hospital and they think enough's enough. I don't know, but maybe do you have some sort of message for anybody who's listening who might be thinking in this way?
I think I fully understand where that headspace comes from. You know, change is difficult at the best of times. It's a really complicated situation that you find yourself in when you're looking at all these really daunting experiences that you've never been through and you've got to do all this hospital stuff, which is not a world that anybody wants to walk through, really. But the benefit of the nutritional changes that someone like me can recommend is, one, they're not that difficult once you get your head around them. But two, and it's a point that I harp on about more than anything, is that more often than not, the changes to diet that I would recommend can augment the effects of the conventional therapies. So it actually adds onto what you're doing, and it isn't an either or. It's a, you know, maybe you only have to do this once if you do everything at the same time, and it really does make a difference because they are adjuncts and they are enhancers. So nutrients compounds the natural world that you can eat through your food, your diet, just what you put on your plate, can actually transform the way your body handles all of that conventional therapy, not only to, like I said before, go through it in a more peaceful way, but also we can boost your immune system. So if we're trying to kill cancer, surely you want your immune system firing on all cylinders, not just let the drugs do it. So there's so many ways that I can support, and doing them both at the same time actually gives you the better chance to be successful, and it doesn't have to be massively complicated.
Okay, well, good. I hope some people have been inspired by that, because I always hope to encourage people to engage as soon as possible with somebody who's going to give the kind of advice you've got on offer, you know, as it will. I just feel it's bound to help them so much.
Yeah, and any practitioner that's making it too difficult for you to do, find another practitioner. Right. My job is to meet patients where they're at. That's what personalised medicine is. You know, it's not, I want to give you this shopping list where you can't buy it all at your local Asda. You have to go to some weird, complicated shop. I mean, it just shouldn't be like that anyway. I can't even fathom that it would be that complicated. But if your practitioner's not listening to how you can manage and whether you can cook the meals yourself or you need somebody else to do it, if they're not listening to that element and how to fit that into your lifestyle, find another practitioner, because they are out there.
Well, good advice. Thank you. All right, so cancer and cancer treatment in particular, there are many stages, right from awaiting from diagnosis through diagnosed but pre-treatment, commencing treatment, during treatment, coming to the end of treatment, immediately post-treatment, and then all the following years. Would you say that integrative medicine has something on offer at every single stage? And are there one or two points that you think are the most important in which to get the support of an integrative medicine practitioner?
Well, yes to the first point. Integrative medicine has something to offer at every single stage. The point that you bring it into your healthcare plan, as we've just said, as soon as possible is the better. But what we're doing in integrative medicine is supporting the human body as a whole, which means that the actual implemented strategies doesn't have to change throughout all of that, tweaks it a little bit, but we are building the great foundations for your health. So ultimately, during treatment is a really fundamental time for you to take maximal care of your body, most definitely. Right. There are a lot of people post-treatment who actually say, look, I know this went wrong last time, I never want to go back there again. And that's often a really great time to find integrative medicine because of the psychological empowerment that it gives you. It's a sort of taking control moment, and that's really useful. Right. Almost awaiting diagnosis, when you're in that kind of interim land where you feel really unstable and insecure and stressed, that's the point to find a practitioner too, because we can start. It doesn't matter what the end result is, we can make a start, and that makes you feel just a little bit better, and a little, you can relax a little bit because you're actively doing something.
Right.
So in reality, we can help at every point, but it's not just about what we do. It's about how it makes you feel about living with what you're going through.
Right.
That is the difference. Because sometimes being in the crazy oncology world can just feel like you're being ferried into these different places and shoveled with drugs or given really doom and gloom prognoses and all of that. And I'm all about empowerment. People need to feel like they're doing something positive. So that's as part of it as what you eat or what supplements you're being recommended.
Great. All right. So onto something a little bit different. Our experience at Yes to Life is that the most common profile for one of our inquirers to our helpline is a woman with breast cancer. And this is, I would say, because it's much more common for women to be looking into this territory. And of course, the incidence of breast cancer is so tragically high. So hence the combination. The flip side of this is, of course, that far fewer men are receiving the benefits of integrative medicine, although the situation is slowly improving. So are most of your clients women? And is there anything you'd like to say to any men listening, or indeed to the partners of any men listening?
So you're right in that integrative medicine is very heavily dominated by women. I actually have partners of men with cancer who seek me out and come and see me on their own to get all the information that they can take back. So that happens.
Right.
Because I can do that. As long as I have permission to talk to people, it just doesn't matter to me. I'm whoever I need. But yes, it is changing. So I'm getting many, many more men coming through my doors for everything. And what would I say to any men listening? It's never a bad thing to want to take care of yourself. It's just not. So if we're talking about whatever the complicated male psychology is that prevents them from asking for help or saying, look, I've got something wrong and I'm not sure, or look, can I look at this weird kind of integrative, it looks a bit naff to me, it's not really proper medicine, all that, all of those thought processes can just, you know, you have to just put them aside and say, look, if I want to look after myself, that is the most masculine, macho thing you can actually do in life. So do it. And if that involves sending your wife to see me or your partner, fine. It's not a problem for me. But actually, just come and find out how you can demonstrate how to take care of yourself. Because that's the best, most masculine example that I think anybody can be shown.
I have a feeling that maybe the whole area of kind of nutritional science, if you like, has become very much more scientific, largely through functional medicine. And this is actually a help to men because it feels like a recognisable science that they can have some more respect for. It may be the same treatment that was being given 50 years ago without the same science, but it has more behind it in that way, and that makes it a more of a logical choice that might appeal to men. Do you think that is an element?
Massively so. So not only in the nutritional science world, but even the biohacking world, which is kind of in this field, if you like, it's mainly men. You know, we look and we see all of the people that I look to as nutritional science authorities these days are actually male. And that's not to say there's a couple of good women, but the people who are really driving the podcast world, which is a great place to find out the information, there's a lot of men around. It is a lot of this kind of functional stuff comes a bit out of bro science from the exercise world of old. And it's kind of formalised it and turned it into, you know, particularly when you're talking about sort of the ketosis and the diets of like muscle building or whatever, it all now is coming into the healthcare realm and it legitimises the whole exploration. And it gets really fascinating when you look at sleep researchers, and there's several really famous sleep researchers, which makes that macho, oh, I only need 4 hours of sleep a night thing, just not a thing anymore, because you have a lot of male researchers, women as well, but there's a lot of authorities in the masculine area which are convincing men that actually it's not a macho thing to only need 4 hours sleep. You should get much more. It's great. It's an evolving science. It's wonderful.
Well, that's very exciting. That's very good to hear. And for listeners who've never heard the term biohacking before, please expand.
Okay, so I don't know that there is an explanation really. But anybody who is kind of looking at ways to influence their biology in a way that is additive. So there are a lot of people out there wanting to live till they're 180 or whatever they're choosing to do. And essentially, it's what can I use as tools that are in the modern world? Mm-hmm. Actually, when you look at them, they're really old tools, but, you know, let's not, rain on anybody's parade. But there's a lot of people who are just trying to get the best out of human biology.
Right.
And it's a little different to illness medicine, where we're getting people from being unwell to healthy. This is more for people going from healthy to optimal and then super optimal. But I don't really care. I listen to it all. And there's a lot in the biohacking kind of healthy to super optimal world that can be brought into the quote chronic illness world and used to benefit people. Mm. So a lot of supplements, a lot of different techniques. Mm. All the body is about managing stress inputs and outputs, and a healthier individual can cope with more stresses, and therefore you can do more extreme kind of cold thermogenesis, which is just really cold freezing exposure, and sauna treatments and all of those kind of complicated stuff. But you can bring that into the chronic illness model and just understand that the buffer zone for stress is lower and still implement the same therapeutic strategies. Mm. So it's understanding where the line is and how to implement it with your specific patient population that really can mean that these tools are sort of democratized. They can be used by anybody.
Right. Very interesting. I mean, the thing that they have in common, these, is the direction is always the same. I often like to talk about the kind of message, if you like, of integrative medicine, which is that, you know, if you want to stay well, generally, these are the kind of things you do. And if you're ill, you don't start doing something different. You do, they're the same things. It's all the same direction. And this, you're saying the same thing, that even if you've got a chronic disease, your direction is the same direction as if you're well, but you want to be optimal health. It's still a similar movement with similar strategies.
Absolutely. And there should be no line between, okay, I'll do that when I'm healthy. You know, there's a lot of, when you're in an illness world, there's a lot of, oh, I'll do that when, or I'll do that when I feel a bit better. Actually, it's just about dose. So every tool can be used. It's just how much and at which point, in terms of in your day more than anything else. So there should be no prejudice against using some of the more, quote, biohacking tools. It's all to do with the same themes and the same direction, as you say, exactly that.
All right. That's great. And that, of course, contrasts with things like government message that tells you to eat five a day. But once you have cancer, well, it doesn't really matter what you eat as long as you keep your weight on. They clearly are, you know, completely at odds with each other, those two messages.
Grain of truth in some of this. So, but it's at an extreme, and I can understand the research where they're saying, you know, you've got to keep the weight on comes from.
Yeah.
But this is the problem with the nutrition science. I don't think there's anything out there that is total rubbish, but a lot of it is very highly extreme based on a grain of truth. Right. And all of my work is about trying to make all of these things less extreme and help individuals understand which bit of all this minefield of nutrition science is for them and which is the bit that they need to listen to.
Mm, good, good. Well, that's the role of some expert support, really. So I wanted to ask about your experience of oncologists in the UK. We're all well aware of the fact that things are different here to, say, in the States, where there's a much greater acceptance of the model of integrative care. Are you finding that you're able to collaborate to any degree, as I imagine you'd like to, or do you feel that your interventions are just at best tolerated? Is there a growing acceptance that you are actually contributing to a patient's well-being?
I'll speak very generally. To be perfectly honest, the experience does differ quite a bit.
Yeah.
But generally speaking, there is a really growing openness, particularly when I'm recommending nutritional intervention. My job is to provide the science so that the oncologists who are busy, they don't have the time to do the research. You know, every time I give a report and I make a recommendation, I link a research paper so that even if they're even slightly querying it,
right,
they go and read the research paper and they just get it. So it's like, oh, okay, oh, I understand the mechanism or the reason for that recommendation. There's a lot more you know, I take it that the onus is on me to not so much justify, but explain the rationale for my patients as much as for their team, their oncology team. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot more acceptance. A lot of the time, oncologists will talk to their patients and get them to relay messages to me. I kind of wish they'd talk to me a bit more often. That would be really nice.
Yep.
But that's not a problem. It's just like we can talk science to science in that way. We don't have to kind of go through the translation. Mm. And some of the recommendations, there's a little bit of hesitation around. You know, there's a lot of science behind, particularly things like mushrooms, so just natural kale, all of those kind of mushrooms, the compounds that are out there.
Mm.
Then you feel the oncologists go, we don't really know. And they're not being inaccurate, because there's a lot of difficulty in doing the proper scientific trials on those kinds of things.
Mm.
But oftentimes they're more than happy if I can demonstrate the science that I'm using and that there's not likely to be any detrimental effect. They're more than happy to say, that's fine. Sometimes I do say, look, just do your bit and then I'll add in the fancier bits when you're done. And that is fine for me too. So
right, but anyway, it's encouraging what you're saying, because the rule in Britain generally has been, well, I don't want you doing anything whatsoever other than what I'm telling you to do. And so people would just have to do it in secret, which is, it doesn't move the model forward at all. Whereas what you're doing is building understanding amongst the oncological community that there are things that can be done to help. And you know, it. Otherwise, it's such a painfully slow process. I mean, you know, when Yes to Life first started out some 14 years ago or so, there was an 800-page report on Cancer Research UK, almost entirely favourable about medicinal mushrooms. It doesn't exist anymore. I don't know where it's gone. But you know, the evidence has been around for so long. They're enormously helpful, and in some countries recognise that and they use them in oncology wards. But you talk to an oncologist here, well, we don't do mushrooms, you know, they do drugs. And but that has no relationship to their actual benefit, you know, what they can do to really help patients in an enormous way in relation to cancer treatments.
Mm. You always hear the figure that it takes 17 years for the research to go from research papers into modern medical practice.
Right.
It's too long. And
agreed.
It doesn't always get there.
That's right.
And, you know, it's beyond the scope of our conversation today to get into a conversation about where the kind of politics is within drug companies and pharmaceuticals and all that kind of thing. And I don't think anybody really knows the answer. And I don't really have a dog in that fight. I'm always on the side of my patients. And if I know something that can help, you know, I'll be truthful. A lot of the time it's, well, we don't think it's going to make any difference anyway. So, yeah, it's fine.
Right.
So, okay. But I'm getting oncologists contact me and say, wow, we didn't expect that to make that much difference. And that is all I need. Just
that
a little chink in the kind of, no, we know what we're doing.
Of course it's perfect, because we don't need oncologists to become functional medicine practitioners. We need them to recognise that functional medicine practitioners exist and that they can help.
Absolutely. And, you know, there is a growing appreciation of nutritionists that they tend to use dietetics within the conventional model. And that has its pluses and minuses, but they're still bound by a very conventional rule book of dietetics, which is not where we're at with nutrition science now.
No, that's right. Well, yes. Well, the 17 years, I think you're right. That's a bare minimum. I've been harping on about it's been 50 years since vitamin C was shown to be useful in cancer, and it's just received a $10 million award for further research at Iowa University for the research they'd done, which showed that it doubled the lifespan of people with pancreatic and glioblastoma just by adding it to conventional care. You know, it's just like massive, really, what it can do for almost no money. But it's been 50 years for that to happen. And, you know, there's the thing that has to be acknowledged is that there's no business model for researching that or pushing it. Nobody wants to. And so to expect that it's ever going to happen that way is a pie in the sky. And it's up to our governments to pay to find out this stuff.
Mm. And I was having this conversation with somebody yesterday, actually. It's like, when you're in my position and I deal a lot with teams, I like working with teams of healthcare professionals because I think it's the best way to work. And we often have these conversations of, well, we feel like the outsiders, but really we're trying to help the conventional model, and we're trying to help the government, we're trying to bring down the healthcare bills and all that kind of stuff. And you can feel a bit marginalised and a bit, this is unfair in our position. Yeah. And you then say, well, okay, so what are we going to do about it? What's the proactive step here? And a lot of the time, historically, people in functional or alternative medicine have been very anti-conventional medicine, and I don't think that's done us any favours whatsoever, because it's just left this chasm between, look, we're saying vitamin C is important, but nobody will listen because it comes from all those people who just think that, like, all of their kind of wacky stuff is important. And it's created this really divisive territory. Mm. And I'm sort of one of those people, and there's many of us out there, and we sit in the middle ground and we say, look, we're not anti anything, but we're trying to bring everything together. So please look at this research. Please understand that we're not trying to use an extreme sham charlatan medicine to give people false hope and take people's conventional drugs away. Yeah. We're saying, look, a bit of vitamin C, really cheap. It's really cheap. And it can really, 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 really help. Mm. And look, here's science where we know that if we do this in this 24-hour window of you having this, it doesn't apply to vitamin C actually, but it does to some nutrients. We know that things like glutathione can affect chemo, so don't give it within 24 hours. But beyond that, these things are, we know all the science. Just talk to us, because we will be able to help your world, governments, NHS, but we'll also be able to help patients. And I think that's what matters at the end of the day.
It is what matters at the end of the day, exactly right. Yeah, so you're completely right. And this is, if you like, the bedrock of integrative medicine. It's not like saying right, wrong, good, bad, all the rest. It's looking at all the resources that could help somebody, which, of course, is the position of the patient. That's really what any pragmatic patient is, not taking sides or anything else. They're actually looking at, will it help me or not? And that is the right position. I am completely with you there. And it's also very interesting to see that as integrative medicine has developed, as it's evolved, it does seem that judicious combinations of orthodox treatment and other elements are having some of the most astonishing results, far beyond what either of the two past disciplines of, you know, orthodox and alternative, that could ever do. That bringing them together is almost like a magic recipe. It's astonishing how, if you look at the vitamin C trial, for instance, it isn't just the life expectancy that changes. It has multiple other effects on the patient's experience of having the treatment. Mm. So, you know, it's almost like a wonder combination, just bringing this one other non-drug thing into the recipe.
Mm. Absolutely. And I mean, the danger then has come in the past. People then say, all about the vitamin C, and it's not. It's absolutely what you just said. It's additive, and it's a cumulative effect, and it can be exponential. And the downside of working in my industry, which is much more unregulated, obviously, is that you do get the people going to television and saying, look, I took this much turmeric and it completely cured my cancer, and that's probably true in their case. That's not a randomised controlled trial. That is not a treatment protocol. Can things like turmeric, curcumin help in cancer? Of course, but it's about understanding that not all of us are going to say, look, just shovel down 10 pots of turmeric a day and you'll be fine. It's not like that. It's how we can use these tools to maximum effect for all and together. Hence the integrative of my title.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, that's a great note to finish on. But thanks so much for talking to us today. I just wanted to give a little sneak preview for our listeners. We're busy planning our annual conference for the end of this year, and we're looking at a whole weekend this time rather than the one day we've had up to now. But one of those days will be entirely dedicated to nutritional science, and I'm delighted to say you're going to be speaking for us.
I am indeed. I'm really excited, actually. It's just a real pleasure to be able to bring my work to a bigger audience and to your audience. It's been wonderful to speak to you today, and it will be a pleasure to be part of your conference.
Thank you very much indeed, Victoria.
Pleasure. Wonderful. Thank you very much indeed.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
It's heartening to hear of at least the first beginnings of collaboration between oncologists on the ward and functional medicine practitioners. Persistence will win the day eventually, I'm sure, but so far it's taken far too long. For links to material related to today's show, go to the Yes to Life website, that's yestolife.org.uk, click the show logo that's on the homepage. If you live within striking distance of Manchester, be sure to take a look under events on the Yes to Life website, again that's yestolife.org.uk, or on the Yes to Life Facebook page to read all about the Cancer Wellness Day that's coming up on the 27th of April. Very many thanks for listening today. I hope you can join me again next week. Goodbye.